The Leah Harlequin Show. Sponsored by Step Finance, your go-to DeFi portfolio manager on Solana. BitMEX, the OG crypto derivatives platform and the best place to buy your Bitcoin.
Things really are just starting to heat up.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the Leah Harlequin Show. Super excited to do this podcast because I have my new studio. As you can see, I have a new mic. So if I'm coming through nice and clear, can you let me know? So I'm really excited to jump into all of this. Now, before we kick things off, this show is sponsored by BitMEX. So I want to do a quick shout out to them. So BitMEX is actually an OG crypto derivatives exchange and now has a spot exchange for you to buy and sell crypto. Especially in a bear market, you need a name that you can trust. BitMEX sets the standard in reliability, performance, and transparency. And of course, it has proven itself through multiple cycles, stood the test of time, and that's really important with everything that's going on right now and everything that we're actually going to talk about on the show. Right now, BitMEX is actually celebrating the start of BitMEX Spot with 1 million USD in prizes. Pretty insane. So to enter, users just need to trade the crypto equivalent of $250. Users can enter up to 25 times to win their share of the sweet stakes. So it's pretty good. One lucky winner will even receive 500,000 USD in BitMEX. In Bitcoin from BitMEX. So pretty insane stuff there. Now, in order to be part of this, I've left a description and a link for you to BitMEX in the description below. So definitely go check them out. Now, this show is also sponsored by our friends at Step Finance. And joining me today to talk about all of this, the market, what is going on, whether DeFi is over, is George Harrop, the co-founder of Step Finance. Let's bring George on. George, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hi, Leah. It's great to be here. Good to be back.
Yeah, it's great to speak with you. Last time we spoke, you were traveling all over the world. You were sort of escaping the lockdowns. Can we get a quick update? Where are you right now?
Yeah, getting arrested or something.
Oh God, hopefully not.
I've been traveling a bit as well still, but I'm trying to like chill out on that a bit. To be honest, I'm kind of sick of it. I've been to Asia recently. And went over to Vietnam for a bit. It was probably like the only country that's really sort of opened up in Asia. So it was like my first time back in a couple of years. Now in Turkey and sort of around Europe as well. So just sort of doing my thing. And for the next 12 months, I might sort of not be traveling as much because it seems like all of this COVID nonsense is kind of ending. So it's actually getting a bit easier and you don't have to like move every couple of months.
Yeah, well, you're in Turkey. I remember at one point Turkey had those necessary magical passes that you needed, those injection passes. So what's it like right now in Turkey? I'm guessing it's a bit better.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's none of that now, which is great. I was walking down the street the other day. I saw like 8 different crypto shops that were just like exchanging it for cash for all of these different coins. I dare say they're not regulated. They probably don't have licenses, which is great. They're just there doing business, which is what you want to see. So as a country, it gives like it's a thumbs up from me.
But Turkey's pretty interesting because I think didn't the president of El Salvador go to Turkey recently, or the head of state from Turkey went over to El Salvador, and also the currency is not doing very well. So, you know, do you think they're likely to would be the next country to adopt Bitcoin, any other crypto? What do you think?
You know what? I think it's probably seeping into society here more than other countries. Like there's just random shops on the street that you can, oh, you want to repair your iPhone or something? Cool. You can pay the guy in Tether or Bitcoin or something. And you don't really see that everywhere, right? Like, and I had another friend I was talking to as well recently who was saying very much the same sort of thing. So yeah, I think as a society, maybe people have been pushed more towards crypto because the lira is kind of a nonsense currency that's been blown up. Maybe that's kind of a catalyst, but as I think I've mentioned before, I think it's about 1/3 of the country has an exchange account. That's crazy numbers. Like that is really big. I actually heard that number when I was talking to one of the exchange operators here. So, it's huge.
That's crazy. I love to see it, but to be clear, I don't love to see the lira crashing. I don't like to see any fiat currency crashing, unfortunately. But I love to see the adoption, particularly in countries that need it. But let's kick things off. It's been a pretty hectic, I'd say week, we've seen crazy liquidations. Before we get into all of that, for those that don't know, can you tell us a little bit about Step Finance?
Sure. So Step is a portfolio manager, really. It's an on-chain data provider for the Solana ecosystem. And we're a place where you can, you know, users can manage their portfolio across all of these different dApps. So there's about 50 different integrations. We're monitoring a lot of on-chain data from all these DEXs, yield farms, whatever it might be. And we're just sort of that one place to go that gives you the overview of everything. So I guess, you know, with all the market turmoil and all these different things happening recently, we've been sort of sitting at the bird's eye view of really what's going on. So, yeah.
Yeah, you have the information. Let's get into this. What is your take? Why is the market crashing? And, you know, what's been going on and how long do you think it's going to last?
Yeah, we had a few catalysts, didn't we? Like I guess, I don't know how long it was. Was it 2 months ago that Luna was a thing? It seems time has warped.
Yeah, it was. I know when it was. It was before I'd traveled. So it was like maybe April. I think it was April, May. April. I'm going for May, early May. That's what I'm going for, early May.
Something like that, right? So like a couple of months ago, things really kicked off. And we had Luna, this, you know, supposed alternative blockchain that also had a stablecoin attached to it and UST. And the mechanism of which UST was created was pretty much a Ponzi scheme. They did have a lot of crypto backing it. They had like 3 billion in Bitcoin or whatever. But then they had 18 billion of this UST coin issued. So I mean, it doesn't matter how much collateral you have. Like if you have 18 billion owing on the books and you only have 3 billion backing it, then there's nothing much you can do. But you know, that unwinding, I think, was really the first shock that we saw in the market. And then, of course, yes, there's the macro things going on. You've got inflation and the Fed and like wars and all this kind of stuff. So, that's not good. And they're not bullish things. But I think really it started with Luna. And then from that kind of maybe exposed some of the fragility in the market of, you know, now we have like Celsius more recently having problems and maybe going under. Nobody really knows. Nobody's like transparent. And that was like a centralized, you know, lender. I'm pretty sure they had an app, maybe they had a website as well.
They have an app, yeah.
Like, yeah, you could borrow coins and that sort of thing. And then we had Three Arrows Capital as well, who was one of the very large funds in the ecosystem. A lot of people looked up to them. They also seem like they've gone under. Nobody quite knows. Again, being very silent, not really talking to partners. Billions of dollars at stake. Seems like there was a lot of leverage in the ecosystem. They borrowed a lot of money, didn't pay it back. Other people, you know, are saying, where's my money? And it's not there. So yeah, look, I think it's been a crazy time. And all of that has probably resulted in a lot of sell pressure on the market, right? So, you know, we in the Celsius instance, in that case, like I think there was one on-chain contract which you could monitor. A lot of people looking at the Etherscan transaction for that. It was like 148 million of Ethereum, I think, was locked up in that contract, and it had a specific liquidation price. So I think we very nearly escaped liquidation on that. The price was very very close. But I think that's a good example of on-chain data, right? Is usually in a financial market, we don't really have an idea of what people's individual liquidation prices are, what's the real story going on behind the scenes. Whereas at least if everything's on chain, you can just like look at the actual blockchain to see what's going on. Is the money there or not? Are these loans being paid back or not? And that's been, I think, a plus point of the last couple of weeks is we can at least see what's going on and people can sort of monitor it in real time, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, but I think that not everyone understands that because, you know, on-chain data can be super daunting. A lot of people do own crypto, but it doesn't mean they understand the on-chain data side of things. So how can people essentially start measuring those on-chain metrics? What should they be looking for? Where do they go basically to start?
Yeah, so, I mean, fundamentally, these are kind of complex things, right? You know, when we're talking about collateralizing a loan in a, you know, some sort of coin to then borrow a stable coin to then lend it to someone else for an interest rate, like they're not simple concepts. So I think firstly, like definitely reading up on these things and how they work and the mechanisms involved, that's like step number one, right? Do your own research. It's always step number one. Yeah. But after that, look, there's a lot of different platforms, right? So In the case that I mentioned before, you know, that was a specific MakerDAO vault, which is a essentially people lock up Ethereum on the Ethereum blockchain, and then they mint a stablecoin against that called DAI. And you can see these transactions happening. And in this case, a lot of people are looking at Etherscan for a lot of that information. In the case of STEP on Solana as well, you know, you can monitor funding rates across a lot of the different blockchains and different pool values and wallets. You can look at what exposure wallets have to how much they're borrowing, how much, you know, they have in collateral and what their collateral rates are. So, yeah, look, I think there's a lot of tools out there. Nansen, another great example. Dune, another great example. Glassnode. These are all sort of giving you these insights to look at these contracts. But that's only really half the problem, right? The other half of the problem is to understand what on earth all of these things actually mean. So I think you need a bit of both, right? Having the tools is great, but also you sort of need to know what to look for at the same time.
Yeah, but you touched on this, but I do want to get more detail on this because liquidations are not what we want. You know, especially you don't want to have your funds frozen and you can't withdraw them. So I think that moving forward, people will need to understand the on-chain data, be able to interpret it, and know which places to stay away from. So in terms of, you know, Luna, Celsius, 3AC, everything that you mentioned, what were people looking at on-chain to get the most accurate information about what's going on?
Yeah, so there's a couple, like, so the vault was one, you know, that was right. A great example. Funding rates are another one. So with Luna, what we saw was when it was UST was starting to depeg, right? UST was a dollar, it was their stable coin, and then it started to go to like 98 cents or 97 cents or something like that. And a lot of people were watching some of the Luna explorers to see how much Luna is being burned and redeemed, because how it worked was that essentially you burned Luna to create the stablecoin, and then if you wanted to unwind your stablecoin, then it created Luna. So it's kind of like, cool, it's great if everyone just burns Luna, right? And then the price of Luna goes up and everyone's happy. But when the reverse happens, it's kind of a cascade, right? So, you know, a lot of people are looking at some of these explorers and we're seeing like a lot more coins being minted, and that created a lot of inflated supply, which turned up in the futures markets funding rates. So if you went on to some of the futures exchanges, like, you know, the Binances of the world, FTX, maybe BitMEX also has a Luna market. I don't know if they did, but you could see it in the perpetual futures, right? In one case, we could see on STEP that the funding rate, aka the price it costs for you to short Luna, it was something like 88,000% or 800,000% per year. So that's pretty pricey, right? If you're going to short that currency, you're paying a lot of money to short it. But that really sort of shows you the sentiment, right? So given that information of what the markets are actually doing and what people are doing with their money, then maybe you can make the conclusion like, hey, this peg is not going to hold. This like 98 cent thing, it's probably going to go to zero. And that's exactly what happened. And we saw it sort of, you know, fall quite a bit from there. People also monitoring the movements as well in some of the wallets on Nansen from the 3 billion treasury, which was meant to be backing it. We saw that went to Binance and then sort of went into a black hole after that. And the assumption was that all the Bitcoin was sold to try and, you know, back up this thing. And of course, that wasn't good because that was bad for Bitcoin. That's a lot of sales. And then if Bitcoin goes down, everything else comes down as well. So, you know, I think that's kind of what creates these cascades you know, if something goes down a lot of people get liquidated, that makes it go down more and you get this like force feedback loop, which is quite destructive.
Yeah, really destructive. And so for that reason, I want to get into DeFi. I have titled this show, Is DeFi Over? Is DeFi Dead? Because, you know, we often hear people say when the bear market comes, nothing but Bitcoin will survive. You know, I think that is an exaggeration. But what I think was interesting for me personally this week was the disruption on the Solana network. And I know obviously STEP is sort of part of that ecosystem. So before we get into Solana, can you sort of give us some background and an overview of what actually happened? The network was on, it was off, the price crashed, what happened?
So actually the Solana network's been great. It's been very fast. It's the latest update. What the problem was that there was one individual application called Soland, and they were a lender. And they had one, so essentially you put your SOL or USDC or, you know, wrapped Bitcoin or something into their lending protocol, and then you can borrow other coins against it. So that's all well and good, but you can get liquidated if the value of your collateral falls. And that's exactly what was happening, right? With this market turmoil, the price of SOL was going down, and this particular whale was something like, you know, 70% of their order book. So, you know, very big position. And they had a sort of, I guess, an emergency internal meeting. They have a governance token as well. So this was all out in the open. So that's, I guess, another thing to keep in mind. Yes. Is like some of these DeFi protocols, they have these governance tokens, right? And what does that mean? Well, it means that people get to vote on stuff. Well, what do they get to vote on? I mean, it's sort of who knows is the first answer to that. The second answer is like, well, like people can propose their own, you know, things to vote on, and if enough people vote on it. But how it worked out with this particular scenario was that this whale had, I think it was 130 million of collateral in this lending protocol, and they were borrowing 100 million worth thereabouts in stable coins. And the problem was, if that 130 million went down below 100, then, you know, that could cause contagion for the rest of protocol and everyone loses money, kind of thing. So they had a vote and of what to do. And one of the proposals was to take control of the whale's account and to be able to sell that balance, right? And how much did you need to do this vote? Well, you needed 700K. So I think a lot of people quite rightly brought the point of like, hold on, I only need 700K to vote on what to do with 130 million. Like, that's a pretty crazy situation. That's the first thing. Secondly, like, what, we're voting to take someone's money? That's also pretty crazy. Like, why that's against a lot of ethos, right, of decentralization. So they had a second vote, and the second vote annulled the first vote. Then I think there's been a third vote as well. Yeah, but luckily, you know, the price of SOL's gone up, so that's no longer an imminent risk. Like on the first instance, like, look, this is just one particular, I guess you call it app on the Solana blockchain. There's lots of apps on lots of blockchains. But I guess maybe one positive to bring out of this is at least it was all out in the open. It wasn't like Celsius where it was like, oh, I don't know what's happening. Is the money going to be there tomorrow? Who knows? At least we all knew where we stood. Like, we could see the position. Like, you could look at the wallet in step. You could go, well, okay, they don't have, if the price goes down too much more, like, that money's going to be poof, like, disappear.
Yeah, I mean, I think having it all out in the open is really important. Transparency is obviously key, particularly in this space, particularly when it comes to finance as well. But my issue was the fact that they had the ability to vote to take control of somebody's money. And I think my concerns about that aren't really eased by the fact that they were able to have another vote. I'm just like, wow, like, this is bad. Because if that's possible, what else is possible? Yes. You know, and as somebody who, I know you're, would you regard yourself as a freedom maximalist? Is that sort of how you'd say it? Yeah. So somebody who's a freedom maxi, a bit like myself, how does that sit okay with you?
Well, everyone's able to make their own apps, and everyone's able to make their own configurations of those apps. Maybe I make an app where I say that I'm a communist dictator and all of the money has to go to George nobody has any rights. As long as there's a free market to do that, great, like 100% for it. And if people want to invest in that thing, fantastic. Ultimately, I think the first thing was, yes, at least it was all transparent. The second thing was that luckily it didn't go through. It does bring up some questions, right? Yeah. And I think, you know, the team's probably learned from that. I really like the Solend team. I think they do a great job. I think maybe this vote and this proposal was maybe a misstep. But to be honest, like, is it really that different to a centralized exchange when they can just lock your account because you didn't do
payments?
Like, it's no different, right?
So, no, it's no different, but no, I'm with you. It's no different, but DeFi is DeFi, decentralized finance. It prides itself on being sovereign and, you know, only you control your assets. Like, sort of reminds me of the whole issue about MetaMask. We're like, oh, well, maybe, you know, it's not that safe, which is why I always say, I feel like every bear market, more Bitcoin maxis are born.
Well, Maybe that's the case. I think certainly bear markets like expose vulnerabilities and things that are built up over a bull market. And I think you saw that with 3AC, whereby in a bull market, wow, we're like the best fund in the world. We're so rich. We've got all this money. It's pumping. Woohoo! Like, let's buy a super yacht. But then as soon as things don't go their way, things implode. So it kind of like it exposes maybe some of the underlying cracks. And that's good for the whole ecosystem in general. We see that every single time. There's always blow-ups. And people get better, you know, from the most part for that. So I think it's about if people do their research enough and sort of understand these mechanisms, then you can at least try and tread the waters and be able to see, you know, what's a good idea, what's a not a good idea, and be able to maybe evaluate that and you know, value the risk involved in some of these different things.
So where would you say we're at right now with the markets? Yeah, I'm going to leave the question very open-ended and broad.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. Nobody knows, I think, is the answer. All I can say is, look, I've been in this thing for over a decade. I've seen this kind of stuff happen many times before, all these different blow-ups, peak fear, everyone thinking it's going to zero tomorrow. It's not going to zero. There will be a new blooming of a bull market at some stage. Don't know when that'll be. Don't know what the catalyst for that will be, but it's always something different. You know, history, you know, doesn't repeat itself, but it often rhymes. So
I think love that saying.
It's great, isn't it? Right. And it's true. It's often a little bit different each time. You know, there's some similar concepts that we can take from it, but you know, it's a little bit different. So I think we probably have to wait for a lot of this leverage to unwind. There's still like a lot of these big funds which built up that have these over collateralized, you know, under collateralized positions that owe a lot of money. And I'm sort of hearing as well from some of my friends, you know, that are doing funding rounds and stuff, VCs aren't as willing to you know, go and fund these things as they once were. So
I'm sure
maybe that's a bit of an indicator for sentiment. We'll sort of see where things go.
It's interesting because, you know, we often say that these 4-year cycles are driven by the Bitcoin halving. And so we tend to start predicting things based on that. Metric, and it's been proven right so far. However, people like Willy Wu, who also, you know, look at the on-chain data, have started to say that because of all the smart money that's come into the space, these 4-year cycles are now sort of done and finished. What's your take?
What's smart money?
I guess like the MicroStrategies and like major institutional money.
That's the thing. If they were smart, they would have been in 12 years ago.
They wouldn't have been in today.
So that's the thing. So people go, oh, the smart money. I think it's the dumb money, right? So it's like, that's how I see it.
You're the smart money, George. You got in 10 years ago.
No, well, it's like, pick any time frame that's like not today. Like that's smart money. I think institutions coming in has probably been a thing which has happened, this bull cycle, which everyone like probably drove a lot of the hype and, you know, everything number go up and everyone's happy. But it's also a double-edged sword, right? Because that also means that we're very correlated to stocks, which we are. It's like literally the correlation chart is like exactly the same. So that's bad because that means that these institutions now have crypto on their balance sheet and then, oh, the stock market's going down. I need to cover my positions. Oh, I'll sell some crypto because I have a small, piece there and I don't really, you know, care about it. So I'm going to sell that first. And then that makes crypto, you know, worse off for it. So I think fundamentally, like you need people, and I always say this, like the primary reason to get into crypto is like the ideological philosophical reasons for it. That's sort of the most important thing in my mind. And there will be people that come and go. There will be traders that appear on Twitter that like tell you, looking at the charts and the stars, where they think the number and the line will go. These are sort of, you know, passing through. These people are sort of passing through. So I think the people that have often had the best returns have been the ones that have thought of themselves as investors rather than traders. So I think that's how people should consider themselves is like, you know, why do you think that this is the future of the financial world? Why do you think it's good for people to have Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies? If those reasons are sound and that plays out, great. And I think it's either going to be like, Bitcoin's either going to be $0 or $1 million. It's still in that. Anything in between that is like just an undecided state. And the longer that we're not zero, the more likely a million is. So yeah.
There you go. Heard it here first on the Leigh Heilpern Show. But I love that. I love a good prediction. But you didn't fully answer the question. 4-year cycles, are they over? I assume they must be if all this institutional money is coming in and it's therefore not this uncorrelated asset.
Yeah, 4-year cycles, I don't think we need to put a timeline on it. That's what I would say. I think the macro is so messed up in the world right now. Like America's how much in debt? Like on the books, 30 trillion or something?
Trillions, yeah.
Yeah, like unfunded liabilities, 300 trillion. Like it brings in like trillions less in tax revenue than it can to actually go and pay the bills. So like fundamentally, the US dollar, the linchpin of the entire economy, is screwed like long term. Doesn't matter if it's a bull market, it's a bear market, you know, the stock market go up or down. Like fundamentally, you look at it on a long scale, doesn't work, can never be paid back. Debt must be printed in order to keep going. So I think in the long term, like things will go up. The question is like, is that a 4-year cycle? I don't know. I think things will be much faster now. I think the leverage in the ecosystem and all of the money printing that's happened after COVID has just made things like happen way quicker. So you might slosh all one way and then slosh all the other way. So we might be down 80% today and then we'll be up like 200% tomorrow. I think that, yeah, quicker cycles is probably the way to go. So probably not 4 years. Maybe quicker. And does that align with the Bitcoin halving? And I mean, yes, it could be coincidental though, I think. And if you look at the coins which a Bitcoin halving like reduces from new supply, like it's actually not that much. Like the exchanges pick any market on Binance and it will probably do more daily volume than the entire, you know, halving Bitcoin of like the last month or so. So yeah, it's something TBD.
Yeah, and speaking of the whole thing is speeding up. That 2030 agenda where you'll own nothing and be happy, I think that's speeding up to 2025, I think. So Yes. It's, you know, it's just a catalyst. And actually, I think somebody posted today an article from Forbes from 2016, which actually shows them talking about this 2030 agenda. We've only just become more aware and awake to it because of everything that's just happened. It's speeding up, that's for sure. Get to read it. I know exactly. That poor guy as well, who's become the face of the great reset. You know what I mean?
Like, oh, you're the guy from the meme.
Literally, that poor guy. He probably all he wanted to do was be a model or something, and then he ended up becoming the face of the great reset. Oh, that's funny. He's probably like not even vaccinated. He's probably just like really anti all this stuff. But there you go. But we were talking about like, you know, narratives and adoption and things like that. You know, Bitcoin's always held that that narrative as a hedge against inflation, and that's sort of the reason why people tend to flock to Bitcoin. So, what do you think is going to be that reason? I was thinking it's everything that you mentioned. It's all the rubbish that's gone on. You know, Canada freezing accounts and all this stuff, which will wake people up. What's your take?
So the question is like, what's the catalyst or Bitcoin, you know, where does it sit in, you know?
Because like right now, you know, we're seeing a 40-year highs when it comes to inflation. Bitcoin isn't really acting as that hedge against inflation in the short term. So people aren't necessarily flocking to Bitcoin as a hedge right now. What would make them flock to Bitcoin in the near future?
Yeah, it's a good question. Like, so The whole hedge against inflation thing, again, it kind of depends on your perspective, right? Like you could go and look at the chart and you can say, well, you know, for the monthly, we're down. For the yearly, like maybe we're down. But actually after 2 years, we're up like 200%. And after 4 years, we're up like 500% or whatever the number is. So I guess, you know, the whole hedge against inflation thing, like does that mean that it has to always go like one line straight up all the time? I don't think anyone expects that, right? So it's kind of like, what time frame are you assuming that this is going to happen? And what are the reasons that people might want to hold crypto? I think it's probably getting closer to people. Like, so for example, I've had to do a lot of like international wires recently, and it's the most painful, hateful purpose.
It's like, horrendous.
It's and like money just disappears and nobody knows why. And then it's like, oh, it'll bounce back in 30 days. And that's like a normal acceptable thing apparently. And there's an intermediary bank involved for some reason, and then you have to pay them money, but you don't really know at the start of the transaction how bad it is. And yeah, like, you know, just trying to get like bank accounts reactivated and these sorts of things. Like the whole system is just completely terrible. And I've done a few payments recently where I've just paid people in Tether. And I was tweeting about that recently as well, where it was just so much easier. Like, what's your address? Here's my address. And then I just paid them. Done. They don't have to think about anything. And like, it's everything's provable. Like, I can give you the transaction link. So I think like we're definitely, the more broken the system is, it's actually better. So I think things need to get worse before they get better. And I'm actually, on the one hand, yes, things getting worse for people is bad. But on the other hand, it's like, I think it's actually for the better in the long run. And people will be better off in the long run if things get worse. So, you know, if the local banking system doesn't work and everyone switches to crypto because it doesn't work, or the local currency, you know, gets wrecked in a whole big blow up somewhere like the 1998 financial crisis, yeah, maybe that's a catalyst for people to actually go and switch. I think that's probably looking more and more likely by the day. It's just a question of like, where is it actually going to flare up first? And yeah, I think like international payments is certainly one area that should like be displaced by crypto like so easily.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's funny that you mentioned that because I've actually also been doing a ridiculous amount of international payments recently and they're disappearing. Like I've had a big payment that should have arrived, which hasn't arrived. Like there, it's actually insane. 3 to 5 business days. It's been a month. Like, can we get some customer service?
Yeah.
It's actually insane because obviously I'm British and, you know, in the UK, doing payments from one person to another is super easy. It's free. Faster payments is fine. But as I expand and I move around the world, it's actually horrendous.
Yeah. Why are people okay with this? Like, why is there not riots in the streets? I don't know, because this should affect everyone, like in some
really bad.
In some way. Yeah.
I don't really know. I also think it's because like, do you know what it is? It's because we're moving towards a global world, aren't we? So like initially, okay, tech is developing, but we would stay within our own countries. Whereas now borders are, of course we have border control, but borders are dropping, the world is getting smaller, you know, with all this technology and we're all working remote and internationally and everybody's sort of going all over the world. And so I think as, you know, tech continues to evolve and so the world becomes smaller, perhaps then it will shed a light on it and more people will realize how broken it is. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, often I've also found that the best systems to move money have also been the systems that have worked for thousands of years. So the oldest money transfer system in the world is called Hawala. And it's basically, you know, a guy who knows a guy and that's how money moves. And it's like, you know, you pay someone and then they pay someone else locally because the local systems often work okay. Like the domestic banking, like you say in UK, it's fast and whatever. But whenever you need to like convert between these different systems, it's just complete mayhem. So yeah, like I've seen a lot of that, like in a previous life in the remittances world. I think the number was that there's something like 2,000 individual payment systems in the world. And like, that means like wire being one system, and then like Swift and faster payments and whatever else and local countries and apps and all this sort of 2,000 different systems. So like, that's the fundamental problem of why things are so broken. It's like literally nothing's interoperable. Nothing really works. Everyone has their own currencies and their own agendas and their own rules. So like really you need like a level playing field, right? And that's what I think crypto is. And maybe that's Bitcoin. That is like the one unit of account that you can just sort of move everywhere. And it's like really simple to do. And if everyone agrees on that, then life becomes way better and economic growth, you know, goes very well and people are able to do much more stuff in the economy. Like if you have to spend days trying to pay someone, that's such a waste. And I often think like, and then there's people employed to like do these jobs as well. And I often think like their job is based on an incompetent system being terrible. And that's such a waste of like productivity in the economy. Like you have all these people just earning money for doing like nonsense things. There was a very good book called Bullshit Jobs, which everyone should go and read. It sort of sheds a light a little bit on some of these things that we take for granted every day. Maybe they don't need to exist. Maybe they can be automated. You know, payments is a good example of that.
Well, I have two questions that I want to ask you. The first one is, with everything that's going on in the world right now, you know, in terms of stock market, wars, supply chain issues, you know, and just all this brokenness. Do you think that it's destruction by design, or do you think we simply just have incompetent people in charge?
Yeah, you know, there's a good saying, don't ascribe negligence to what can be described by incompetence. And I think it is you know, incompetence. I think it's like, it's not a plan per se that I would say, or, you know, if there's like overlords that are moving pieces on a chessboard.
You don't believe in the overlords?
I mean, there are people who want power, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, these are horrible people. I don't want Bill Gates putting a microchip in me. But, you know,
would you let Elon Musk?
No, I don't want anyone.
Just checking. Sorry, just checking.
Even if Elon comes up with a great idea. Okay. But yeah, look, so they probably are like a lot of baddies out there. But often, like, how do they impose their will upon people everywhere? It's quite difficult. So, like, yeah, there might be some common threads there. But I think there is a lot of dysfunction in the world. And there's a lot of, like, you know, Muppets in high positions. And often these Muppets just are prone to making poor decisions. We see this all throughout history. There's emperors and rulers who are just incompetent and are like total fools. And that's how they're remembered for thousands of years later. It's no different today. So, like, we have a lot of those people around the world right now. And, yeah, I think that's the main problem. And I think the solution to the problem is not trying to, like, find better ways to do things. It's to make the rulers and make them less important to your daily life. So if they can't impact your life, that's the ultimate thing. Like, I wish, like, the president of a country was such a useless position, they couldn't decide anything for anyone's life. You know, they couldn't lock you in your home, or they couldn't, you know, take away your money in your bank account, or close it or freeze it or whatever. I think if we had, you know, more of that, of, you know, taking away a lot of that power and just ascribing by a rule book, I think the world would be a better place. So yeah, that's what I hope we can get to one day, is to reduce the power of these rulers. And maybe the best way to do that is to take the money away from them via crypto.
So I want to push on that a bit, just because of what we spoke about earlier, you know, with Solend and things like that. I still feel, and I'd like you to maybe convince me otherwise. I don't know. It's up to you. I still feel that Bitcoin is sort of the only, not the only, like, one of the safest bets, just given there is no, just given the decentralization and everything that we saw that happened with Solend, you know, where they could actually vote. And if you didn't have, I think you said $700,000, you didn't get a vote. So yeah, what do you think?
Like, Bitcoin's been through many different crises in its history as well. Back in 2010, there was, I think that was the one where there was like the 184 billion Bitcoin bug, and they had, Satoshi had to roll back the chain. So there was a chain reorg at that point. And that was about 1 year into Bitcoin. Well, was that 2010? Yeah. So it would have been about a year and a bit into Bitcoin's history. 2013, I think there was another incident then. That was another, I think, rollback with a client or something like that. I think it was like the Bitcoin core client 0.7 to 0.8 or something like that. So again, that was like a majority hash rate decision, literally one person doing that. At the time it was BTC Guild. And then I've been around where gigahash.io had 51% hash power for like 2 weeks. So it was through the goodness of their hearts that they didn't double spend transactions. And that we're all here today to talk about how wonderful Bitcoin is. But
that's, look, so funny.
that's a couple of years into Bitcoin's existence, yeah. Right? So, okay, let's look at these other chains. How old are they? Usually a couple of years, and they have these problems. Okay, so they're on exactly the same trajectory as Bitcoin. So where will they be in 13 years? Probably a lot better situation, I would hope. So I would say that, look, Bitcoin isn't a shining beacon. There have been problems in the past, and we should be real with that, that they are real things that have happened. And okay, given that information, like, what to do now? Like, yes, Bitcoin's in a really good situation right now. You know, there's maybe a couple of ways that you can measure, like, decentralization. People throw around that word a lot, right? Oh, decentralize this, we decentralize that. I kind of don't like it anymore. Like, it, because it doesn't mean anything. Like, people don't really know what they mean when they say it. There is one way to measure decentralization. It's the Nakamoto coefficient, I think it's called. It's a measure of like how many people need to collude to essentially do something bad in the network.
Yeah.
So like basically you want the maximum number of people necessary. So you want the coefficient really high because that means that it's very unlikely that tens of thousands of people around the world that all don't know each other and all have competing economic interests are going to like all screw each other at the same time to their own, you know, detriment. But there's some blockchains that, you know, they might just have one person who can do it. So look, Bitcoin ranks highly there. Solana actually ranks very highly. Ethereum ranks very highly there. There is no on off button for all of these other alt chains, as much as Bitcoin maxis would like to tell you. Solana has 1700 validators. None of them have the off button. Ethereum has proof of work at the moment. It'll be going to proof of stake soon. See how that goes, I guess. But proof of work's been pretty solid for Ethereum so far. Having said that, Ethereum came out of a fork. We're currently using forked Ethereum. If we all cared about decentralization, we'd be using Ethereum Classic because that was pre-DAO hack. That's why Ethereum forked in the first place, because Vitalik didn't like people losing money. So again, like all of these different systems, they have each had crises in their lifetimes. And some of them, I think now you can't just say, hey, I'm going to launch a blockchain. See you in 10 years when everything's all good. It's like, no, you have to speed run the last decade for these things and try and learn from all these mistakes and then just like never make a mistake ever. I think that's pretty unrealistic. I don't know if I can convince you, but I would just say like, you know, there lots of things have happened to lots of chains, including Bitcoin. So we should just keep an open mind.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I think it's good to have these conversations. Lots to continue to learn. So given we are in this dreary crypto winter, dreary bear market, what would your advice be to people right now?
To the dreariness? Well,
yeah, look, how do you survive a bear market? What should they be doing?
I think, again, it goes back to like learning the fundamentals of things. So this is a good time to research, because often in a bull market, you get all flashing lights and explosions everywhere. Hey, this coin's making 1,000,000,000%. You're going to get rich tomorrow, blah, 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 blah. That's often what people see when, you know, bull markets happen. And when that's not the case, people maybe find themselves a little bit lost. But I think like if you think that cryptocurrency is going to be a force for good, like look into these DeFi protocols. What's a lender? Like, can I get a loan by clicking a few buttons, you know, with a smart contract? And is that better than a bank? Why is it better than a bank? Is it easier than a bank? Can I go and send money and move payments overseas without having to talk to a bunch of Muppets between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. every day? All these sorts of things, right? So I would say like that's all you can really do in a bear market, right? It's like focus on the education, focus on finding like either good projects or good people that you like. And it's not really investment advice. Even if you don't have any money to invest, I think that it's just interesting, like even if you're interested in freedom and like what do these people have to say? What's their philosophy? Why are they doing things? If they're doing things to get rich, it's probably not the people to follow. If there is some sort of meaning behind it, then great. They're sort of the people to look out for.
Yeah, I think that's a really good last sort of final note. You know, be aware of the narratives around certain projects and companies and people. That's really, really important. So George, where can people follow you? You know, how can they find out more about Step? Give us the full overview.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at George_Harrop or Step Finance on Twitter as well. Just find us. We've got a Discord as well. So yeah, always open to hear from new people. Actually, you know, one thing as well that happens in sort of bull markets or bear markets is we're seeing just a lot of new people who are totally brand new to crypto. They have no prior experience of any of this kind of stuff. So actually a lot of our customers, like maybe even the majority, over 50%, are in that category. They have no prior experience with other stuff. So, you know, that's good. That's, you know, there's new people getting interested in what's happening in this ecosystem and learning. And you know, come and join, and we're happy to help educate.
Amazing. Guys, go follow George. He has a lot of incredible commentary, particularly on things that are going on in the world right now. Freedom Maxi, which I think is super important. We need more people like that. Definitely go check out Step Finance while you're there. George, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure catching up with you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. And guys, please don't forget, if you are watching on YouTube, to hit the subscribe button, hit the like button so you never miss a video. We'll see you all next week. The Leah Heilpan Show.